told the kids the story of the emperor's new clothes. And, you know, I like that story. I like it, I think, because it's kind of funny, right? You have this emperor strutting around, and he's naked. And it's only the kid who has the honesty to say how things are. You know, you and I, we do a lot to keep up appearances. We like to act like we're on top of things. But most of it's, well, it's just show, sort of like the emperor and all of his servants pretending this is such fine material. Sometimes the question of a child is what we need to realize how ridiculous we are, you know. Daddy, why are you doing that? And if we're lucky, that truth can give us a good laugh at ourselves, a laugh we probably need sometimes. The truth isn't always easy, though. And it certainly doesn't always come cheap. Chapter 3 of Ruth's story is about the truth. It's about how Ruth risks everything for the truth. Now, if you remember last week, chapter 2 was sunny and bright compared to how things started out for Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. Ruth had married into Naomi's family while they were refugees fleeing a famine in Ruth's homeland of Moab. But catastrophe seemed to follow catastrophe for Naomi's family. First famine and homelessness, then her husband's death, finally the death of both of her sons, Ruth's husband and her brother-in-law. Naomi had decided to go home to Bethlehem in Judah, and Ruth, her daughter-in-law, had insisted that she would come with her. And then we got to chapter 2 last week, and the sun rises. Ruth goes out to glean food for her and for her mother-in-law, and she happens to happen into the field of a good man, a kind man, a man who's also a distant relative. Meet Boaz, right? And Boaz shows this senseless, abundant compassion to Ruth. He showers Ruth and Naomi with nearly a bushel of barley. And then he invites Ruth to keep coming back until the end of the harvest. Ruth and Naomi, they eat pretty well off of Boaz's generosity. But here's the truth. Sporadic acts of charity will never get to the roots of poverty. Sporadic acts of charity will never get to the roots of poverty. Bushels of grain, they might last Ruth and Naomi maybe all the way through the summer. But what will be for them there for them in the winter? What will get them through to the next harvest in April or May, because harvest was in springtime in ancient Israel? Things looked great in chapter 2, and things were great for the moment. But the reality, the truth, was that Ruth and Naomi were still completely vulnerable, completely without help or hope in the world. They had no steady income, no hope of a steady income. Like so many still do today, they lived hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, handout to handout. That was the truth. Now, we have lots of ways of dressing up a bad situation. We dress it up to disguise a hard truth. I mean, who needs the truth when you have 77 TV channels? I mean, who needs the truth if you have Netflix? Or we cover up the truth with gossip. It gets buried under all the tantalizing tidbits of, you know, did you hear or did you know that she... Distraction. We distract ourselves. But love means looking at the truth. It means emptying ourselves of every distraction, every excuse or disguise, until we can see truly what's in front of us. Another person's life, like ours, but unique, hurting in her own particular ways, with her own special joys and sorrows. Distractions get in the way of that. They shield us from reality. That they keep us at the handshake, how's it going level. You know, we ask, but we never wait or even expect much of an answer. As John Lennon used to sing, living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all you see. But if we see, if we really see what's in front of us, the truth, then we become responsible. Reality gives us this weight to carry, this burden of responding, of loving our neighbor. Seeing can be dangerous. The truth can be dangerous. At the start of chapter 3, Naomi states the truth. She looks at Ruth, you know, sore but smiling from these long days of gleaning in the harvest fields. She sees Ruth's sense of accomplishment. You know, Ruth has done what Naomi had called impossible. She's kept the two of them fed for these weeks and months. But Naomi knows that as proud and as accomplished and as lucky as Ruth feels right now, that this isn't a mountaintop. You know, things don't suddenly get easier and smoother from here. Now, these are only the first steps, maybe the first steep mile in an endless journey that's only going to get longer and more rough and more difficult. Gleaning for today and tomorrow, that can't provide for next week or next month. And what's going to happen if Ruth gets hurt or if she gets sick? Where are they going to find food then? Naomi knows that Ruth is defenseless, that she has no safety net. She has no one to look after her. And if the bottom drops out for whatever reason, there's nothing there but this long, long fall. No one to catch her. So Naomi says, my daughter, isn't it the truth that I need to find you some real security, a place where you'll be cared for and taken care of? Verse 1. Isn't it the truth? Ruth, you may be distracted by this windfall. Boaz, he may be distracted by his generous charity. But Ruth, isn't it the truth that you really don't have any security? That all of this, it's dangling by a thread. Ruth, the truth is we need to find you something better. Naomi sees the truth. Knowing the truth is different from showing the truth. You know, if step one here is Naomi seeing what's true, then step two is showing others that truth. I mean, then maybe something will be done about it. We see, we show, we do. If we only see what's in front of us, we're just tourists, we're spectators. Maybe we get a guilty conscience from it, but not much beyond that. Our guts tell us that we need to do something. But before we can get to action, to the doing, we have to show openly what the situation is, what the trouble is. Otherwise, aren't we just sort of rushing in to cover up? You know, we rush to tidy up this unsightly, this uncomfortable, awkward situation. Naomi says that Ruth needs to show the truth of their situation. If seeing is risky, showing the truth is even more risky. I mean, for Ruth, the truth, showing the truth, will mean she must risk just about everything. Her safety, her respect, her welcome in her home, maybe even life itself. Naomi tells her, wash and perfume yourself and put on your finest clothes. Then tonight, go down to the threshing floor where the men are eating and drinking. But don't let anyone know you are there yet. Now, parents, this is not advice to give to your daughters. Naomi tells Ruth to make herself as alluring as possible, to put on her most provocative clothes, and then to go walk the dark and deserted Bethlehem streets all by herself, all to get to this after-harvest party where the working men will surely be more than a little bit drunk. That's a recipe for trouble. I mean, put on your sexiest clothes, walk alone through the dark streets, and then go to that wild party. That is not good advice. Not safe advice. And we all know society shouldn't be this way. We all know that the men are to blame, that being a man, being a drunk, it's no excuse. But still, we have to tell our girls, we know it, that there are parts maybe of Saskatoon that you shouldn't walk alone at night, especially not in a miniskirt. I mean, no matter how many take back the night walks we hold, men still do horrible things to women when it's dark, when the men are drunk, when they get the chance. That's what Naomi tells Ruth to do. And then she says, when Boaz has finished eating and drinking, keep clear in your mind the place where he is lying. Then go uncover at his feet and lie down. What? Uncover at his feet and lie down next to him? What is Naomi telling Ruth to do here? Some of our Bibles interpret this as uncover his feet. You know, pull back the blanket so he gets cold feet. And that's a little less shocking. But the Hebrew here, it simply says uncover at his feet. Not putting into quite so many words what Ruth's supposed to be uncovering. But when later she asks Boaz to cover me with your garment, with the edge of your cloak, we start to get the picture. I mean, basically, Naomi tells Ruth to go to Boaz and to take off her clothes. And we have to remember what one Bible teacher says. He says, as for the relationship between Ruth and Boaz, the narrator, the storyteller here, moves them from the spotlight of the harvest field in chapter 2 to the privacy of the furthest corner of the threshing floor. In a night so dark that friends can't even recognize each other. And much of what happens that night, well, we'll never know. For the narrator stays too far away for us to get a good look. We'll be able to hear the two of them speak, but not much else. And perhaps that's just as well. Some things may be best handled in private. Now I'll tell you, if it's risky for a girl to walk alone through the dark streets in skimpy clothes, while crawling into bed with a man naked, that's asking for lots of trouble. I mean, if the townsfolk found out, the people of Bethlehem, well, at the very least, they'd lose whatever little respect they had for Ruth. I mean, certainly she wouldn't be getting any more charity. At worst, well, they might drive her out of town. They would call her a no-good Moabite, just like all of her Moabite ancestors. After all, if we know our Bibles, we can remember that Moab himself, the father of the Moabites, he was the son of Lot and Lot's daughter who got him drunk and then got into bed with him. And, you know, it was the Moabite women who seduced the wandering Israelites back in Moses' day, and they drew them into worshiping other gods. You can read that story in Numbers chapter 25. Ruth, and they all sneer as they said her name. Ruth turns out to be just one more Moabite tramp. That's what Naomi's telling her to risk. Now, this is the kind of story that might make us feel a little bit uncomfortable. It might even offend us. Compassion and celebration and generosity. We can get behind those things. But when you start to talk about taking off your clothes, that puts us a little bit on edge. But I'll tell you, the Bible is full of stories like this one. Stories that push us beyond what we're comfortable with. The Bible makes heroes out of especially women who push beyond what's appropriate to do what's right. I mean, there's Tamar, the twice widowed daughter-in-law of Judah, who dresses up like a prostitute to sleep with her father-in-law, all to preserve the family line. You can hear about that in Genesis 38. And then there's Rahab, who's a professional prostitute, and she shelters and shields the lives of God's spies in Jericho. And God honors her by preserving the lives of all in her household. And in fact, she became the mother of, well, none other than Boaz of Bethlehem, who this story is about. And we could make this list longer with names like Jael and Abigail and Mary of Bethlehem. God doesn't seem to get squeamish where we get squeamish. Now, we have to remember that God designed us, all of us, you know, our physical parts and our psychological motivations. And God uses all of us, every part of us, to get God's compassionate and celebratory work done. And God, he's not ashamed of nakedness. And that's how God made Adam and Eve. They didn't come with clothes on. And God has frequently used naked bodies to show the truth we need to see. He told the great prophet Isaiah to walk around naked and barefoot for 3 years, all to show the truth of what Egypt's political weakness was. He told the prophet Jeremiah to publicly strip off his new fancy linen underwear to show the truth of how God would desecrate the pride of God's beloved people. And Micah, the prophet too, he walked around barefoot and naked to show God's judgment. And we need to never forget that God stripped himself naked to show us the truth of his love and the consequences of our sin. Matthew 27 says, "The soldiers stripped Jesus. They mocked him, they spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. And at the cross, they divvied up his clothes by casting lots." God's not afraid of naked bodies. God uses them to remind us what is true. And Ruth's naked body, it shows Boaz what's true. You know, we get caught up. We start thinking about lust and sex, and maybe those feelings were a factor. But the truth that Ruth is showing is her vulnerability. Her lack of security. She has nothing left to protect her. Beneath her fanciest clothes, I mean, even bathed and perfumed, Ruth is a woman who's only a meal or two from starvation. She has no protection, no safety net, no family, no home. Boaz prayed God's blessing on her when they first met back in chapter 2. He said, "May you be richly rewarded by Yahweh, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've sought refuge." But now when he startles awake in the midnight to find this same woman lying near him, she confronts him with his own prayer. She says, "You are our family redeemer. You must spread your wings over me." That Hebrew word wings, kanaf, it can mean both wings and the corner, as in the corner of your garment. Ruth uses that word on purpose. Boaz had prayed for God to provide and to protect Ruth. He didn't realize that in truth, he needed to become her provider, her protector, her security. Truth is, sometimes we need to become the answer to our own prayers. Boaz is startled awake. Here's this woman. He responds with truth. He responds to this truth with grace and gentleness. Now, that's easy enough to imagine someone responding otherwise. You know, he might have wanted to protect his indignation, or protect his reputation, yelling out, you know, "Who is this woman making a big self-righteous scene?" Or maybe he would have been interested in a one-night stand, because after all, who would know? Who would trust the word of this naked Moabite woman? But it is with strong words of promise that Boaz responds gently. He responds not with shock or indignation, but with blessing. He realized that Ruth, risking all of the little she has, she is fighting for her and Naomi's survival. Her kindness, it's not for him. It's her kindness for the sake of Naomi. And Boaz recognizes that. Boaz compliments her. He affirms that everyone in town knows that she is a woman of moral substance. Yes, she's gone to extremes. She's exposed herself to all sorts of risk and criticism. He knows that her heart is strong and pure. Boaz tells the truth. That he says finding a solution to her problem, finding her security, it's going to be complicated. There's this other relative who has a claim on her, who has the first responsibility to care for her. That's how their culture worked back then. We'll talk more about that next week. But in the end, Boaz sees the truth he has been shown, and he agrees to be responsible for it. He sees Ruth's vulnerability, and he spreads his garment over her. That night, he becomes her shelter, her protector. Again, there's always more we can say about these stories. But we'll say this. Ruth's story, it confronts us with a question. Says, do you have the courage? So far, this story has taught us about compassion and commitment and common sense and celebration. And now it presses even harder and asks about our courage. It takes courage to see the truth. You know, we're so good at distraction. You know, or like the servants and all the respectable people in the emperor's new clothes. We feel that social pressure to doubt what our eyes tell us. We try to explain things away so we don't have to feel uncomfortable. But if we have courage, courage that's rooted in true love for our neighbors, then we're bound to admit what's right before our eyes. A lot of people had to face the truth in this story. Naomi, Ruth, Boaz. They had to admit their vulnerability, that the razor's edge they lived on. They had to admit their responsibility. We have to face the truth too. When we make time to truly see our community, our families, even our own lives, what is it that we've been working so hard to ignore? What uncomfortable truths do we need to admit? When do we realize that, no, we're only pretending that things are so fine, so magnificent, so all right? And then Ruth keeps pushing. When she finally admits the truth of her situation, she still has another step to go. She must show that truth. She must expose, share it in some way. And so she stands there, undressed, in the cold midnight with nothing to hide or cover up her reality anymore. Showing the truth is risky. I mean, at the least, it's awkward. And at most, it can cost us everything. We get so comfortable with our ignorance and our distractions. And it starts to hurt, to peel back these layers of protection. So even if we know that everything's not all right, that everything's not fine, well, we never let others know, never let others see. Sharing about a family situation, sharing about our own sickness, it might change the way people look at us. Or if we go and speak to our neighbor about the difficulties we see in their lives, we know it's going to make them feel awkward and singled out. And so we choose to stay quiet, keeping the hurt or the difficulty or the wrong safely to ourselves. Ruth asks us if we have the courage to share with one another. Do we have the courage to show the truth? It may expose us, make us vulnerable. But Jesus said, the truth shall set you free. Amen.